97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, how universities are handling recent scandals involving athletics. Our guest, Paul Barrett, an assistant managing editor and senior writer at Bloomberg Businessweek. And Richard Southall, professor of sports management at the University of South Carolina and director of the College Sport Research Institute. Paul, you wrote a cover story for Business Week that has created quite a stir here at UNC. It shows a Carolina basketball jersey with an F grade on it, and the caption, "No class." Does that refer to classes that weren't taking place, or that you think the university has no class?
Well, I think it's a double entendre that says that we had an extraordinary situation for a significant number of years at UNC where fake lecture classes were being offered that never met. And the second meaning is that in how it has responded to this terrible scandal, UNC's leadership, at least until very recently, has shown a lack of class in terms of how it expresses its concern for the education of its athletes and the degree of candor the leadership has shown in terms of just how extensive this problem was.
Richard, Paul said, until very recently. Have you seen anything that makes you think that the university is rethinking how it's approaching this particular scandal?
Well, I think universities, like any other organization, continually is scanning, the field within which it's operating. So you always, adapt and improvise and do those sorts of things based on what's going on. And I think as the scandal continues and doesn't fade away, then the university has had to respond in any number of ways. And it I'm not as close to it perhaps as Paul is because of, reporting on it as far as reaction of the university, but the university's response is not surprising at all to me.
And Paul, on this program, we try to take a 30,000-foot view of things that are going on, and I see what's happening at UNC is indicative of a systemic problem. Is that the way you see it, that it's not just UNC, lots of schools, and this is not to dismiss anything that might have happened at UNC, but it's indicative of a much larger problem?
Absolutely. And the article emphasized that in a number of ways, in part by quoting Professor Southall, generalizing from what we learned from UNC, that there is a systemic problem of basically lowering admission standards in order to enroll very, very talented athletes. In other words, accepting freshmen to universities who are not prepared to do college-level work, and then basically assigning them the full-time job of playing football or basketball at the Division I level and expecting that somehow, magically, all of this is going to work itself out. And it's just a very difficult challenge for the athlete. It's a very difficult challenge for the instructors on the campus. And it's something that I think universities are finally, belatedly, beginning to address, but there still are a lot of challenges. You asked the question of what indications are there that the university at Chapel Hill may be taking a new look at all this. Well, there's quite specific illustrations of that. Only a few days ago, a few days before my article ran, the university announced that it was appointing a new independent counsel, a gentleman named Kenneth Weinstein, who's a former senior Justice Department official, a former federal prosecutor, to restart an entirely new investigation of what happened because the university acknowledged that it has still, as of this date, not gotten to the bottom of it. So it's clear that Chancellor Folt, who only came into office in the middle of last year, is showing a degree of concern about getting to the bottom of this that her predecessor didn't show, and we'll see how this all turns out.
Richard, Paul talked about your participation in this particular article, and you've said this before, but I'd like for you to add to the what Paul was saying about there are only so many hours in a day.
You bet. Well, you know, the fundamental problem here is that I think what occurs continuously over and over on college campuses that are large educational entities and others, you basically have two different set of core values. That doesn't mean that either set of values is better than the other, but they are just not in many ways compatible. So you have a large scale business enterprise that requires its laborers to work long hours. And at the same time, you have athletic administrators and coaches whose values, and I've done this research since 2000 on athletic department values, they just have a significant difference, and that's a statistically significant difference in core values within athletic departments. And the values are also bifurcated within the athletic department, that the revenue sports just fundamentally have different value sets because they are about generating revenue. And what you're starting to see long indications of now longitudinally, we just finished our latest adjusted graduation gap in men's basketball. And in the major conferences, men's basketball players graduated at a rate almost 32 points less than full-time male students. So what happens is you have so many pressures on the athletes who are asked to work a full-time job. Not asked. I mean, they're not asked. They're told, this is what you're going to do for your grant and aid. And they're trying to succeed in the classroom. Well, there's a reason why many students that work full-time go to school only part-time and graduate at lower rates, because their job is interfering with their education. And until we come to that basic realization, or we're willing to admit it, you're going to continue to have these sort of quote-unquote scandals come up all the time.
We'll be back on Sports Focus right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. Our guests are Paul Barrett and Richard Southall. We're talking about scandals in college athletics, particularly at UNC, but also systemically across the nation. Paul, what sort of pushback have you gotten from your article, not only from UNC, but from other places?
We've gotten a tremendous amount of reader reaction, far higher traffic on our website for that story than the average story. I would estimate that the responses have run about 60-40 positive versus negative in terms of people who, you know, think that all of this, needs to be aired out versus a very, kind of diehard loyalist group, people who are very dedicated to UNC, understandably, and who object to focus on misconduct and other problems that have taken place at their beloved school. And I think the latter is understandable. It comes with the territory when you do a story like this, so I have no problem with it. But I do think with any large organization, whether it's a corporation, a government agency, or a leader in higher education like UNC, if you don't take a candid look at the weaknesses in how the organization operates, you allow terrific problems to fester in the darkness, and I think that's what happened for a number of years at UNC, which is why these things do need to be aired out, and why ultimately I think UNC will recognize this. They have recognized it. I mean, we have a very interesting response from the university itself that we're about to publish on our website. I mean, your listeners will be able to see it by the time they hear this broadcast, in which the university says, you know, we acknowledge terrible things happened. We wished you had focused on the reforms and the fact that we're improving matters. You know, so that's fine. I mean, they want to focus on the glass half full, and I'm, in a sense, focusing on the glass half empty, saying let's make sure we recognize what's happened in the past so that we can do better in the future.
And Richard, as someone on the faculty at UNC, I certainly am not happy that our university has been the poster child for problems in college athletics. And I can understand people writing to Paul and to his publication, angry about that. But I think there's a difference between hoping something will blow over and leading the charge to make significant changes on a national basis.
You bet. Change is almost inevitably going to deal with some pain, so to speak. But again, I think the issue that folks should not focus on is that this is somehow an aberration and that the quote-unquote individuals involved are somehow rogue individuals. That is a consistent pattern that has been used or emerges by universities when these sorts of situations handle. We did a long study of the University of Minnesota situation, which was another academic fraud situation, and the university came to the conclusion that it was two rogue individuals at the university that were involved, the only ones involved. And that really was not the case. And so I think what needs to happen is that policy decisions, number one, need to be informed by solid research. And number two, I really think that reform is not going to come from within, because folks that are within college sport have too many vested interests, and also there's a great deal of groupthink that takes place in college sport. So I think fundamentally there has to be an outside-the-box solution that's going to be, in many ways, imposed upon colleges and universities, because they just can't help themselves, it seems.
Paul, do you think that outside solution is the courts, or are the chancellors far enough, quote, outside that they can actually affect some change?
Well, I think that what Richard is saying is not that the university cannot possibly accomplish change. He's just saying that as a practical matter, it's probably unlikely that you'll get thoroughgoing reform without some outside pressure. And I would agree with that. And I think that outside pressure can take multiple forms. It can be just the pressure of revelation. That's my job, just describing what's happened. It can be the pressure of revelation from people who are involved in the system who decide to speak out. An illustration of that is Mary Willingham, an academic tutor at UNC, who has spoken out. She was actually the main focus of my story, and I think it's very unfortunate that the university's response so far has been to try to vilify Willingham, kind of picking at her and emphasizing flaws and some of the things she said, when her larger message, I think, is one that very few honest people would dispute. So there's that. Then there's the question of whether the NCAA, which is the governing body for all of college sports, in a sense it's sort of the trade association for the business of college sports, whether the NCAA, which has rules on all these matters on academic eligibility, is going to take a close look at this. It is something of a mystery how the NCAA has justified not taking a serious look at the fake classes scandal at UNC so far, since we know that, many members of, the basketball and football teams there over a number of years have been heavily enrolled in these classes, which raises questions about whether they were academically eligible.
We'll return to Sports Focus right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about how universities handle scandals involving athletics. Our guests are Paul Barrett from Business Week and Richard Southall of the College Sport Research Institute. Richard, Paul was talking about where change might come from. It seems like it might come through the court system. Is that your sense of if we're going to see change, that's where it's going to have to come from?
Well, I think that can be one of the pressures that occurs. You know, right now, Judge Wilkin has told the plaintiffs and defendants in the O'Bannon case that they need to sit down and see about having settlement talks. So the court can, in fact, exert those sorts of pressures. But really, the court system is simply another avenue for airing these issues. Because, again, what has to occur is, I think, an open and honest discussion of the many socioeconomic issues that are playing out in college sport. And this forces us to discuss some things that we are very, quite frankly, uncomfortable talking about in society, and those are issues of class, and those are issues of ethnicity and race, and how those play out on the college scene. You know, when you have, you know, the top 10 FBS football player-producing states, six of them are southern states, you know, per capita, and those six states, not coincidentally, have some of the highest poverty rates, and their educational attainment is among the worst in the United States. So you have, in many ways, a migrant workforce that is being recruited and brought to these college campuses, and then the issue of they come from a failing public education system, and how are you going to deal with those individuals when you bring them to your campus to generate revenue for you? And that's a conversation that, quite frankly, folks are very uncomfortable having.
Paul, but if the policeman, if you will, is the NC2A, and Miles Brand, who used to be president of the NC2A, says, what is exploitation? What hope is there that that organization will be involved in change unless forced to do so?
Well, I think it's certainly not encouraging that the NCAA has been publicly completely silent about what's been transpiring at UNC, not because they should pick on UNC and isolate it and make it out as if UNC is the only bad actor, because that's not true. But it just seems almost ludicrous that the NCAA would have nothing to say about this and would not want to review the situation. So I don't know the answer. I don't have any universal cure for this conundrum we face. We have a unique social arrangement in this country where we put a $16 billion college sports industry on the campus of institutions of higher learning. No other country in the world makes that combination. In light of that, we need to do some very serious thinking along the lines that Professor Southall is outlining, because that arrangement just brings intrinsic tensions and problems, and for too long we've ignored those. I don't know that there's a silver bullet that's going to resolve all of it at once.
Richard, one thing that I find particularly disturbing is when an institution, a university, or the NC2A, or one of its partners, a broadcast entity, or whatever that might happen to be, doesn't even answer the questions that are posed by people like Paul, by people who are looking into the O'Bannon case. We're supposed to be, at least at the university level, we're supposed to freely discuss items even when they are not particularly comfortable to us. Why is there so much of a closed mentality about these issues?
Well, I think one of the things that was revealing was in a 2010 president's briefing document, which the NCAA staff created for Mark Emmert to get up to speed on the issues. One of the documents is called Protecting the Collegiate Model. And within that document, the phrase was written, by definition, the job of the president of the NCAA is to protect the collegiate model. Now, you have to understand the collegiate model has one side of it that is business and the other side that is supposed to be educational. So fundamental, the NCAA, in its core documents and its core values, is protecting a collegiate model that is, in fact, economically exploitative, and I think in any way that you would analyze it ethically, as I would talk to my students, it is an immoral system. And so you have the NCAA and college and university presidents that are caught defending something that is inherently immoral.
Paul, in the final 30 seconds that we have, you mentioned that you have sensed UNC taking a different look at things. Do you have, are you optimistic that UNC or some other school will lead the charge to make necessary national change?
I am optimistic that there's an opportunity at Chapel Hill to do something really important at this juncture. This new investigation by an outside investigator who's a real heavyweight, combined with the pending criminal trial against the former head of the Black Studies Department, and the continuing public interest in all of this, provides the university with an opportunity to take a deep breath and really come to terms with this, concede what has happened in the past, and become a leader and sort of rise, like, you know, phoenix-like out of the ashes, in the old cliche, to lead people to a new debate and potentially to new resolutions of the tensions that Professor Southall is talking about.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guests, Paul Barrett and Richard Southall. Thanks to producer Justin Blankenship and engineer Gary Kirk. Thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.